Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Thursday, November 1st, in the Spencer Dinwiddie game, part 2, or 3, or 4, seems like 5, I don't know. But this is your boy, Matt Shook, a sports writer here in the Motor City, covering the NBA for the Associated Press and the Detroit News, a Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Welcome to the show. This is the Locked On Pistons podcast, but you already knew that. What's up to you guys, and thanks for spreading the word out there to the other would-be listeners of the podcast. Got the new season going here, so and check out the Locked On Lions podcast, the Locked On Spartans podcast, the Locked On Wolverines podcast, the family of networks that we have here on the Locked On Network. But today we're going to break down Wednesday's tough loss on Halloween night in overtime to the Brooklyn Nets. We're also going to look ahead to Saturday against the Philadelphia 76ers. This will be the last pod of the week. We're a 4-podcast-a-week show pretty much always, and you can count on that Monday through Thursday, up first thing in the morning so you can have it, get it in the routine for your morning commute or lunchtime or at the gym after work, wherever you do in between classes while you're in college or high school, wherever you do to listen, but make sure you get that routine down and listen to us for our quick show, bite-sized portions of the Locked On Pistons podcast. We're also going to talk about the Mark Stein article from the New York Times, which came out on Wednesday about Blake Griffin. I also have some thoughts on Slouchgate at the Lions practice facility from Wednesday a little bit. I know that this is a Pistons podcast, so maybe you don't care about what happened with Matt Patricia and the media on Wednesday, but I was there and I figured you guys might want to hear about it from a little inside access, so to speak. And I know that this is, like I said, the Pistons podcast, so we'll put it at the very end of the show in case you want to cut it off. I would certainly not argue with someone who's Lions-free in their sports viewing habits and sports fandom, so not going to try to get in your way of what we do here on Locked On Pistons. So I hope you appreciate the patience if you're anti-Lions or anything like that. But give me a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And give us a like on Facebook at Locked On Pistons-MattShook. That really helps us out. Gives us a little street cred as well. We're inching towards 1,000 followers on the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. So make up a couple new accounts and burner accounts that you'll need if you're Kevin Durant or Brian Colangelo or something like that. And just give us some more follows. We really appreciate that. So the Pistons dropped another tough one on Wednesday night, 120-119 in overtime to the lowly Brooklyn Nets, who were coming off of a 3-game losing streak heading into that one. Another Spencer Dinwiddie game. The former Piston hit the three-pointer with 7.1 seconds left in overtime over Andre Drummond, the game winner. This after he hit a long three with 20 seconds left in regulation to tie it up. Just an unreal performance from him. Andre Drummond was even laughing in the postgame about how Dinwiddie always has it teed up against the Pistons, and he certainly does. You know, I just want to talk about the overtime three-pointer a little bit first. Andre Drummond obviously wasn't up far enough on him, but you can understand that being a big man not wanting to get dusted on the drive quickly, and I know this is a situation where, in hindsight, you want to be up on the three-pointer, but if he just drives right by you and gets to the basket and ties up the game, that's not a good look either, and I think a lot of people would be complaining about that too. I thought the problem was Stanley Johnson allowed for the switch. It wasn't even really a pick by Jared Dudley. He just kind of lost his balance before Jared Dudley attempted to make a pick, and Stanley Johnson handed his man off to Andre Drummond way too easily. And if Stanley Johnson's not going to be an offensive performer, he's got to do things on defense. And along those lines, Bruce Brown, who's a favorite of a lot of the fans out there and someone who I've been encouraged with rookie year, we've got to give him a little bit of a slap on the wrist too for the end of three-pointer in regulation. He's got to switch on that play there and just jump out and get Spencer Dinwiddie. I know he's a rookie and it's tough to make bold defensive choices like that, especially in late game situations, but maybe that's why he shouldn't be out there if you're Dwayne Casey thinking about who needs to be out there in those situations there. But meanwhile, the Pistons, on the other hand, faltered in their late last-ditch efforts. First when Reggie Jackson went to the hoop on a failed pick and roll with the game tied at the end of regulation. You could see him and Blake, they drew up the pick and roll for them. But if you know anything about Reggie Jackson late in game, pretty much kind of a half-hearted effort at looking at Blake Griffin on the pick and roll. Looked it off very quickly. His heart really didn't seem into that pick and roll. Felt like more like a pick and get out of my way. Let me take it to the hole. And like I said on Twitter, The play broke down for him halfway to the hole. He started just kind of stumbling down the lane and into traffic, and you could tell that that was going nowhere, and it didn't. And then in overtime, with the Pistons down one, Blake Griffin got the ISO there, the matchup he wanted with the switch on Spencer Dinwiddie, settled for a tough contested 17-foot fadeaway. It looked like he thought he needed to rush the shot more than he needed to in that situation with the clock. And that was it, an opportunity lost. The one easy opponent for the Pistons during this tough four-game stretch that could turn into a four-game losing streak on Saturday in Philly after a promising 4-0 start for the Pistons. It's early, and we don't want to oversell how much this stuff means, especially on a Halloween night before November even starts. But I thought that Tim McCormick said it best on the post-game Fox Sports Detroit. He said that the fans were ready to jump on board Saturday night at home against the Boston Celtics 4-0 Pistons team at that time, and they really laid an egg there and now are staring at a possible 0-3 road trip right in the face. That won't help matters for a franchise that desperately needs some goodwill to get some of the casual fans back, to get some of the momentum going back in a sports town that's starving for some success lately. So, and also we need some more Locked On Pistons listeners on board. We know that the highs are and the extreme lows are the only ways that people get the numbers up for the podcast. So we need some wins, especially early in the season, captivate some of that interest. But there is some interest in the continued strong start of Blake Griffin. We'll talk about the New York Times article in a little bit, but 25 points and 9 rebounds and another solid game for him on Wednesday. Stanley Johnson, a career-high 12 rebounds, 11 on the defensive end. But as we know, defensive rebounds really aren't quite what they used to be, with teams like Brooklyn not really selling out for offensive boards. And, Brooklyn did get a bunch at the end of regulation there on a one possession where they missed a bunch of shots that could have won the game for them earlier on before the end of regulation there. But that's kind of why we're a little bit tough on Andre Drummond. I know some of these numbers look really good for him. But again, defensive rebounds aren't what they used to be in terms of importance in the NBA. That said, I thought that Drummond had his best game of the season, didn't try to do too much, and even had a couple of those post-ups fall too, 24 points and 23 rebounds. Again, a solid game for him in that super role player role that he could excel in if he embraces it, but we know that there's a little bit more there, and we just got to find a way to crack it consistently if you're Dwayne Casey as the season goes on. He's still trying to find his way here. I like that he's not even looking at the three-pointers now. It seems obvious that Coach Casey has kind of nipped that one in the bud, to his credit, as the coach of the new coach of the Pistons. 21 for Reggie Jackson. Some solid stretches for him throughout the game, but I'm guessing that I'm not the only one who shudders just a little bit, even when he scores late, because you know his confidence will go up and he's going to shoot even some more big shots as the game hangs in the balance. And many times those are forced shots, as we saw late in regulation and low percentage ones as well. Blake, the final possession notwithstanding, clearly showing that he's the one who should be running the show late in games. He was great in overtime up until the final possession. Spencer Dinwiddie, he was scoreless until midway through the third quarter for the Nets, and he finished with 25, including a 4-point play on a horrendous Ish Smith foul in the fourth, hitting him in the back for no apparent reason. Kind of opened the floodgates, as Vince Ellis of the Detroit Free Press remarked on Twitter. But for the Pistons, hats off to the bench, by the way. Nobody had double figures scoring, but Glenn Robinson III had his best game as a Piston with 9 points. Jose Calderon played pretty well, a couple of 3-pointers there, as did Zaza Pachulia, the veteran minimum guys that were brought in. Bruce Brown had another nice game overall, and he probably shouldn't be out there in crunch time, but more of a product of Stanley Johnson's continued struggles offensively, kind of forced Dwayne Casey's hand and having Bruce Brown out there. I know that many of you are completely out on Stanley Johnson. I don't blame you, but we'll see where his season goes from here. He's a guy that if the Pistons are going to get to where many of you fans hope that they get to throughout the season, they're going to need contributions from guys like Stanley Johnson to kind of turn things around a little bit here. Some more bad news for the Pistons, though, in that speaking of wings, Reggie Bullock injured his ankle and did not play after halftime. We expect some more word from him in the next couple of days going forward leading into the Philadelphia game, with Luke Kennard already out 3 to 4 weeks with the shoulder injury. Obviously, this is not the type of injury that the Pistons need here, but Philadelphia, like we mentioned, Saturday on the rematch. That is, by the way, a 1 p.m. start on Saturday, so make your plans now. The game should be getting over just in time for Michigan and Penn State at 3:45 in Ann Arbor. I will be going up to Central. I'm excited about that Journalism Hall of Fame weekend. Haven't been there in many years for that fun evening. Spartans, by the way, at noon for football against Maryland. So maybe a two-TV system might be in order for MSU fans on Saturday. Just something to think about there. But the Pistons will then, after Saturday, host Miami for a one-game homestand Monday night in Orlando and Atlanta during the week on the road next week. So certainly a lot easier week next week after a tough week here for the Pistons. Up next, we're going to be talking about that upcoming Philly game on Saturday. But is your company looking for a new way to reach customers? You could be mentioned right now here on Locked On Pistons. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with sponsors that they hear on their favorite podcast. Our demographics, by the way, are 98% males with more education and more earning power than your traditional media audiences. Where are the ladies at? Send the social media and the texts to the ladies. Let them listen to the Locked On Pistons podcast as well. But have your company sponsor Locked On Pistons. Go ahead and email me at Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more. Yes, sir! Later on, we will talk about the Mark Stein article about Blake Griffin that was in the New York Times, and also going to give my firsthand account on Slouchgate from Lions practice on Wednesday. I know you're all very excited to hear about that. But looking ahead to Saturday now, the Philadelphia 76ers in the city of brotherly love. By the way, check out the new Rocky-inspired uniforms that the 76ers had on social media the other day. They won't be wearing them on Saturday against the Pistons, instead debuting on November 9th. Probably a national TV game, I would imagine, to try to get this most bang for your buck with the marketing dollar. But by the way, the Pistons, as far as I know, are coming home on Wednesday night and then traveling back out east on Friday for the Saturday game. Now, you guys know that I'm not used to being this close to teams consistently as in terms of being a quasi-beat writer of sorts like I've been with the Lions and Pistons so far these seasons. So I'm kind of new to this realm. But I would have guessed that travel-wise, that maybe you spend the night Wednesday night after the Brooklyn game in New York, spend the day there maybe Thursday and then leave. Head to Philadelphia on Friday, spend the day there, and then be ready for the 1 o'clock game on Saturday in Philly. But I guess with a chartered flight being so quick that the two nights back at home here in Michigan would be nice late on Wednesday night and then a whole day at home with the family and in your home base for the season on Thursday as well. So because I'm going to be at practice on Friday at the practice facility for the Detroit News. So I'm kind of surprised that there would be practice here on town on Friday. So, we'll keep you updated on that on social media as the weekend goes on. But by the way, Philly going in 4-4 to tonight's game on Thursday night. They lost on Tuesday night to Toronto. They've had a really tough schedule. The Pistons and the Celtics and the Raptors and some other team, some other really good team, Milwaukee, I believe, are the four teams that they've lost to this year. So, and all on the road. They play tonight at home against the Clippers. So in theory, the Pistons should be the more fresh team going into Saturday afternoon's game, not a full day off into a night game for Philly. They've kind of got a day and a half to get ready. So kind of an awkward situation with that 1 o'clock start on a Saturday. You always kind of expect those 1 o'clock games, those early weekend games to have some maybe low energy from the crowd and also the players, as we know that they're not used to being at full strength at 1 o'clock on a weekend day. So it could add another wrinkle to the game. Philly 4-0 on the road and 0-4 on the road and 4-0 at home. So that's a streak that has to end soon for them. Ben Simmons is back after dealing with the back problems that left him out of the game last week here in Detroit. But he's been kind of struggling since he came back, had 11 turnovers on Tuesday night against Toronto. So really kind of finding his way still into the season. Joel Embiid's getting 27 points and 12 rebounds a game, putting up huge numbers. An all-star season on the way for him if he stays healthy. Maybe even some all-NBA and maybe even some fringe MVP talk as well. By the way, I looked up his height. I don't know why I'm saying by the way so much this segment, but forgive me for that. Joel Embiid is listed as 7 foot tall, but yet they introduce him at games at 7 foot two at home in Philly. Just a little bit of an oddball thing for them. And I saw Embiid and Drummond go head to head on last Tuesday night in Detroit. Now, let me tell you this. If Andre Drummond is 6'11", like he's listed, and he might not be, by the way. I have a theory that Drummond is more like 6'9", or maybe 6'10", but he's so big of a guy that you don't really notice that he might be a little bit shorter than advertised. I mean, until you see him next to Embiid, who is like a full 4 or 5 inches taller than Andre Drummond. And I know that if on TV, you might not be able to tell that, but if there's an angle that you can see those guys next to each other, check it out and let me know if you agree with me or not. I left that game last week thinking that Embiid is like 7'3" or 7'4" or something like that. He's huge. Just a mammoth guy. But we'll get to the bottom of Heightgate as season goes on with Joel Embiid and Andre Drummond. As of now, of course, no Vegas line for the game with the Philly 76ers playing tonight, so there would be no line for Saturday's game yet. But I'll throw out a guess, assuming health for everything going forward, and assuming maybe that Reggie Bullock might be out for this game, by the way. I'm going to say that the Pistons will be 6-point dogs going in. That's my guess. If you listen to this on Thursday before the Philly game on Thursday night, before the lines come out, send me a guess of your own on social media. We'll see how we do when the line comes out late Thursday night or even Friday maybe as well. We'll check that out and see who's closest, like Bill Simmons and Cousin Sal do on the Ringer podcast there with football games. Philly, depending on the book you look at, is a 4.5 or 5-point favorite tonight against the Clippers for that game. So it could be a good barometer of how Vegas views the Pistons right now compared to the Clippers, compared to how the Pistons line is with the Clippers being 4.5 or 5. Again, I say about 6, maybe a point less than the Clippers right here at this point. But the Locked On NBA podcast, and that never went away in the offseason. It's still here for you every day. Locked On NBA is your daily national NBA podcast. Every Monday, get the local experts on the biggest stories. And then stay with Locked On NBA all week long with daily 30 minutes on everything going on around the league. Follow for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On NBA. New guests as well highlight the national lineup, Sam Amick of The Athletic, and also Ben Golliver of Sports Illustrated. Good stuff daily from Locked On NBA. Up next here, we're going to talk about the Mark Stein article about Blake Griffin in the New York Times and also give my firsthand account of Slouchgate from Lions practice on Wednesday. I know you all here want to hear about that. So that's up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, which is a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day. Well, I got a reading recommendation, and I'll pass this along on the Twitter accounts and also Facebook as well, the link to this. But Mark Stein of the New York Times, formerly of ESPN.com, talked to Blake Griffin during the winning streak that the Pistons had a little bit earlier on in the year. And I kind of had some journalism brethren thoughts where I shuddered with Mark a little bit about this because obviously he conceived the story right while Blake was going nuts. And in his production, you know, obviously ended up tailing off this week a little bit. Certainly took some of the luster away from his story that he put together for the New York Times, published on Wednesday online anyway. I don't get the print edition of the New York Times. I'm not that learned of a person, but Mark talked to Blake and got some great quotes about Blake, talking about how he's so settled and comfortable here in Detroit, feeling like home, not missing Los Angeles. And he's got a nice place in Franklin now, in case you want to stalk him or something like that, you know, where this where Matt Stafford lives and Mitch Albom, all the heavy hitters. Maybe you'll see him at the cider mill there this fall if you drop in. His brother Taylor is quoted in the article, talks about how they grew up in Oklahoma, which is a lot more like Detroit than L.A. for sure. And it just at the end kind of tied in Blake Griffin and Tom Gores and Dwayne Casey as people that have been kind of written off and have a lot to prove. And it kind of made you feel good about where the Pistons organization might be heading with all three of those guys. And I know that Tom Gores gets a lot of crap from Pistons fans, a little bit of it deserved. And Blake Griffin came in with some buyer beware signs, and Dwayne Casey was coming off of just getting fired. So those guys have a little bit of price tag to them, have a little bit of a downside to them. But again, hosting this show every day and kind of diving into the Pistons, I got to be a little bit more positive than maybe the average person, but talking myself into believing in those three as kind of the gatekeepers of this franchise right now. Worth it if you're a Pistons fan to check out that article, by the way. So now moving on to Slouchgate, all the rage in Detroit and Michigan on Wednesday. And this is the part of the podcast where we're deviating from the Pistons here. So we're going to talk Lions for a minute. Thanks for listening if you don't want to listen to the Lions portion of the podcast at all. And I understand it. And goodbye if you're not interested in that. Have a great weekend. Okay, so now they're gone, and we didn't want to talk to them anyways. We'll keep it between us here. But Mike Rothstein of ESPN.com, who was known as the guy in the Lions media room, who kind of asked the tough questions, some might argue kind of intentionally stirring the pot at times, and he famously has had some run-ins with Jim Caldwell over the years as well. He's a Syracuse guy, kind of more of a aggressive reporter in some ways than maybe some of the other guys in the room. And by the way, I like Mike. I have a good relationship with him when I see him at Pistons games and also Lions games as well. He writes about basically Detroit sports for ESPN.com, so he'll probably pick up a little bit more Pistons stuff as the Lions season comes to an end here. And I'm not any of the stuff that I just said to describe Mike or the other people in the room as far as the media, I don't mean that as a knock on him or a knock on any of the other guys. It's or girls or ladies or women. I'm talking like I'm from the 1950s right there. But in the room, there's just definitely different styles, etc. And I'm still trying to find what my role is with that Lions room and my style is dealing with a beat, same type of people every day and all that kind of stuff, and a setting that is I'm a relative newbie in. But speaking of different styles, Matt Patricia is still trying to find his as a first-year head coach in the league too, certainly pulling from the Bill Belichick playbook a little bit there, the style of being tight-lipped and confrontational in short with the media. Obviously Belichick has kind of earned that right with the way he's won, and not that Matt Patricia hasn't, or he hasn't earned it, but it's not like he's obligated to be a certain way or be open up with the media. Certainly it's a style that he's chosen over time. Although he is, to his credit, refreshingly insightful about the pure football questions. He blows through it very quickly, but he gives you some good insight on some of the meat and potatoes stuff, the in-the-weed stuff about the game, the complexities of football. But everything else, it's just kind of word salad. He says words until it appears like he said something, even though he didn't. And it's just kind of move on to the next question and get this thing over with. And I know that he would probably admit to that if he was being honest with us here. And I know there's fans out there that don't care, and certainly many stand with their coach when there's any kind of team versus media spat because, you know, the media is just fake news. And if we're being honest, journalists should probably just be killed in this country. I'm not exaggerating too much with that rhetoric. Some special times we're living in here in this country. But anyways, Wednesday, Rothstein was among the reporters asking about the Golden Tate trade, as naturally as you would the day after the trade, the first time that Patricia deals with the media since the trade happened on Tuesday. And Michael actually asked a pretty innocuous question. And worth noting that basically every time I've been in there lately, the backstory, it's been testy between Rothstein and Patricia, notably about what's going on with Ziggy Ansah. And to some extent, of course, that line of questioning is absolutely fine because, frankly, what the hell is going on with Ziggy Ansah? It's not the return that we figured might be coming in week two, still has not happened in week nine, didn't go to IR like you figured he might have if they knew that he'd be out for this long. He's got the franchise tag, which makes it a little bit more complicated on both sides of the situation with the team and the player as well. So Rothstein asked about the Tate trade, how does this move help the franchise? And was very much slouched in his chair, kind of exaggeratedly so, peering, kind of looking at him, from that slouched angle, kind of, looking at him from a weird angle, I guess, so to speak, sitting in the front row of the chairs that we sit in for the media talks. Not that it really matters that he deserved to be called out on it by Patricia, but just kind of setting the scene. And Patricia let him have it for some reason. He said, can you kind of just sit up, have some respect for the process? You know, you come in here every day and ask these questions and give me this, and I'm just asking you to have some respect for the process. Just obviously something that had been pent up with Patricia for a while. And then he looked obviously silly for going off like that. And I say obviously, I know that, again, there's some people out there that love this stuff and love attacking the media. But I think from a – and again, I can't be that unbiased person as when things happen with the media, I always kind of shade towards the media and disputes. But I thought it was just a neutral observer would probably say that Patricia ended up looking kind of silly. It got picked up nationally, and with that silly refrain, Deadspin, other places, Golf Digest as well, picked it up for some reason. Many people poking fun of the juxtaposition of Patricia wearing the extremely casual gear, the big black garbage bag that he wears on the sidelines and to practice sometimes. I say that tongue in cheek, but he's just a very comfortable guy with the big beard, big dude, obviously, too. Talking about decorum and respect for the process and how that is a silly-looking juxtaposition as he's with a guy who's super casual about the most things from here. So that's kind of what happened from where I'm sitting. And like I said, always kind of shade towards the media and disputes. But I just thought it was another bad look for a franchise that has had so many bad looks over the years. Already lost some goodwill with a crap performance on Sunday after the fans all got excited about it, followed by trading a popular piece for a third rounder, a move that I, you know, personally didn't like, but seems to be one where the folks that are smarter than me about football love. For some of them. And so we'll just see how this turns out, just like Patricia himself with this era, a move that I was one of the only detractors about with Patricia coming in as being an unproven head coach that wasn't any better than as an unknown than the known they had with the Jim Caldwell era that in my eyes was a pretty good era of Detroit Lions football, especially given, you know, the last several decades of Detroit Lions football. So not a great start to this era, but again, by the way, what do I know about this kind of stuff? But I tell you who knows, and that's Matt Derry. So during these interesting times, you should be definitely listening to the Locked On Lions podcast. Give Matt another plug like we like to do here on Locked On Pistons. And he gives us the plug too, so we really appreciate that with Matt Derry, former Detroit radio guy, that you should be listening to with the Locked On Lions podcast. But by the way, give us a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And check out the Facebook page, Locked On Pistons-MattSchoch. Give us a rating and review on iTunes. We appreciate that. And have a great weekend, everyone. Enjoy the game against Philadelphia. Thanks for listening. Thanks for spreading the word to the Pistons fans in your life. And happy November to you, too. So this is your host, Matt Schoch, saying talk to you guys later.